Seeker. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're not interrupting anything, are we? Oh, okay, good. Good, good, good. Hope you're going to stick around for a while tonight. It is anniversary night. This is the fifth anniversary of Bush's occupation, invasion, and murder of hundreds of thousands of people. And later on in the program tonight, some of you who are regular listeners will be familiar with this. We will be playing, how long is it, Kathy? Huh? We will be playing the sound track from Bush's War, at least the first 6 minutes of it, from this night in 2003. So if you have heard it enough times that you've had enough, I certainly understand. If you've not heard it before or haven't heard it enough, stick around. I think bottom of the next hour, we'll play that for you. This is interesting. Fox News, the filthiest, most degenerate, lying organization in American media, Fox News, has been chosen as the exclusive news feed at the Democratic Convention in Denver this summer. Do you understand that? Anything that comes from the Democratic National Convention in Denver this summer must first pass through the slimy, filthy hands of Fox News. Anything that any network gets, I believe, including the illustrious CNN, will come through Fox News. You got to wonder who agreed to that, don't you? The activities of Hillary Clinton while she was first lady are starting to be made public. That's according to the National Archives. All this is in response to legal pressure by a so-called watchdog group. The group is Judicial Watch, that's run by the ever-insane Larry Klayman. But, of course, what's going to come out is stuff that should have come out anyway. When it was decided that the official records of those involved in forming U.S. policy should be kept secret, whoever decided that deserves to have his ass kicked up around his shoulders, frankly. Another example of the fascist attitude of so many presidents, including Bill Clinton, of course, it is reaching its apex in the administration, if that's what you can call it, of George Bush and Dick Cheney. But this idea that it's none of our goddamn business. You see, what goes on in the White House, none of your business. This attitude is one that will end eventually. When the people decide to end this madness, this will end too. So anyway, over 17,000 pages of records documenting meetings and trips and speaking engagements and social activities that Hillary Clinton engaged in while her husband Bill Clinton was president between 1993 and 2001 are being released. Now, anything that pertains to anything private or personal is redacted. The papers will be released tomorrow. Some of them have already leaked to certain parts of the media. Now, on the campaign trail, Clinton has been arguing, of course, that her time in the White House gave her the experience needed to lead the country, and that Barack Obama does not have this, and that she got it. She knows how to lead a country in a time of war and economic uncertainty and so on and so forth because of her involvement. Hillary Clinton is also someone who said that she, on the campaign trail, she never supported NAFTA. She worked actively against it. She thinks it's horrible. She says it when she's talking to voters in Michigan, of course, and so on and so forth. Well, we have in front of us here two documents, not the actual documents, but email copies of them that, I don't know, it's a little bit different from what you might think. Of course, of the 17,000 documents released, of course, the first one put out for public consumption would have to do with Monica Lewinsky and her husband Bill and what Hillary was doing that day. This is how contemptuous and filthy and snarky and belligerent and ugly and useless U.S. media has become. This was posted by Brian Ross and the ABC News Investigative Unit at their website. Huh? Hillary was in the White House on Stained Blue Dress Day. Oh, Jesus Christ, we all need to know this, don't we? Huh? Thank you, ABC News. Thank you. Oh, my God, we really need to know this, don't we? Hillary Clinton spent the night in the White House on the day her husband had oral sex with Monica Lewinsky and may have actually been there when it happened. This is how ABC posted at their website. Can you believe this filth? These rotten bastards. Don't you just love the new governor of New York who gets his office because of a sex scandal, gets up there, has a meeting, he and his wife, and they say, yeah, we both have cheated. So what? Many times. An initial review by ABC News of the 17,491 pages of Senator Hillary Clinton's schedule as First Lady, released today by the National Archives, also finds significant gaps in time and many days containing only private meetings at the White House with unnamed individuals. The public schedule for Senator Clinton on February 28, 1997, the day on which Lewinsky's infamous blue dress would become stained by the president, shows the First Lady spent the morning and the night in the White House. The February 28 schedule lists her as attending four drop-by events, closed to the press between 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m., and then records her as staying in the White House overnight that fateful day. According to the Star report, President Clinton took Lewinsky into an Oval Office bathroom in the early evening after recording a radio address. Forensic tests later conclusively showed that the blue dress she was wearing, quote, was stained with the president's semen, according to the Star report. There you have it! That's the first document of 17,481 pages available to ABC News. The first one they post on their website is that. Thanks, ABC News. By God, we're happier there to defend the republic, to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. Thank you, ABC News. Christ almighty, what would we do without you? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now we know that Hillary was there the night Bill Siemens' stain got on Clinton's eyeball, or however you want to word it. It doesn't matter. Is there anybody out there who really thinks that this corrupt media, this filthy sob sister media, did you see some of it today with some of the reports on this, the fifth anniversary of Bush and Cheney's murderous little enterprise? There were a couple times today I truly wish I could have just reached my hands through the TV screen and grabbed some of these anchors and yes, yes, strangled them to death. Yes, yes, here I am admitting it. I would have liked to reach through the television and killed these people. Well, there goes Malloy again, threatening violence. Now, here's a document about Clinton's 1993 NAFTA meeting. Hell, I don't know if this is even worth talking about after we got that horrendously important story about the stained dress with Bill Clinton's semen, or Bill Siemens Clinton, or whatever the hell it was. Thank you, ABC. Thank you. Thank you. Ah, Christ, I don't know how I've managed to get through the last 10, 12 years without that information. Thank you. Thank you, ABC. Thank you, Brian Ross and the investigative unit at ABC News. Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Thank you, Charlie Gibson, all you people at ABC. Oh, Jesus, I am so happy. Thank you for giving me that information, you filthy pigs. Now, when we come back, I will share with you a document about a Hillary Clinton's 1993 NAFTA meeting. I know it's a lousy second choice, but, you know, what the hell. While the children die. Cronyism's ready. Come on, we'll bomb a wedding boy. You've been a naughty girl. You put your weapons down. I am the con man. They are the con men. We'll be right back.
is the end of the world as we know it.
Great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time.
Yeah.
For it to reach. And there's no such thing as short-term history.
No. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. It is madness. Let's all get crazy. Put some REM on. Fire up a fat one. It's the 5th anniversary! Yee-haw! Oh, is the mic open? Oh, son of a bitch. Oh, no, no, no. 22 past the hour. Another one of the documents released today out of the 17,497,823,000,000,000 of Senator Hillary Clinton's just released schedules from the 90s. This one is on November 10th, 1993, when the former First Lady was to serve as the at a briefing on NAFTA, the trade agreement. She now says, well, I had nothing to do with that. I was against it from the beginning. There's all kinds of headings here. NAFTA briefing, room 450, old executive office building, closed press, participants, approximately 120 expected to attend. See briefing book for further info. Format, Alexis Herman intros HRC for brief remarks. HRC concludes program. Pages 1375 and 1376. two attendees of that closed-door briefing, neither of whom are affiliated with any campaign, described the events for ABC News. This is from Jake Tapper's blog. It was a room full of women involved in international trade. David Gergen served as the sort of master of ceremonies as various women members of the cabinet talked up NAFTA, which had yet to pass Congress. One attendee said, quote, it wasn't a drop-by on the part of HRC. It was organized around her participation. Her remarks were totally pro-NAFTA, and what a good thing it would be for the economy. There was no equivocation for her support for NAFTA at the time. Folks were pleased that she came by. If this is still a question about what Hillary's position when she was First Lady, she was totally supportive of NAFTA. End quote. The first attendee recalls that the First Lady's office in the East Wing put together, quote, the invitation list, who was invited, authorizations, and all that stuff, end quote. And what is this attendee's response to Clinton today distancing herself from NAFTA? Quote, for people who worked hard to pass NAFTA and who support the importance of markets opening for the economy in the long term, they're very upset. A number of the women who are there are very upset. You need to have some integrity in your position. The Clintons, when Bill Clinton was president, took a moderate position on trade for Democrats. For her to repudiate that now seems pretty phony, end quote. Recalls a second attendee, quote, they were looking for women in international trade who supported NAFTA. Senator Clinton came by at the end, and of course she asked for our support and help in passing NAFTA, end quote. Women who attended that event, the second attendee says, have been incredulous to see Senator Clinton distance herself from the trade agreement as she campaigns today. Quote, they're all saying, what's this all about? We all heard it firsthand, end quote. The attendee says Clinton isn't being honest with voters today. Well, Clinton is not being honest with voters today. Well, you can extrapolate from that politicians aren't being honest with voters today. Look at John McCain. And then I have another flash for you. Water is wet, and you can't strike a match on a wet cake of soap. I think to the degree that he has spoken, I think Barack Obama has been honest, hasn't he? The problem with Obama's honesty, though, he walks right into something like the racial divide in this country, and he's really having his hindquarters handed to him now. The right-wing nutballs in this country, all of whom ought to be taken someplace far out to sea and set adrift in a boat, with no water, no food, and maybe a poisonous rattlesnake. They should. They really should. A big boat. Set them adrift and let them go. These people who are destroying America. You know who I'm talking about. The lead lard ass in this, of course, is Limbaugh. But all his little munchkins who follow around behind him, parroting and repeating the same stuff every single day, every single day. They are attacking him. And we'll have some more on that later. Patrick Buchanan, Now, for all of you people who, and you know who you are, you little munchkins, you people who insist that I'm an anti-Semite, which I always find highly amusing, I print off what you write to me, and I sit around with some of my Jewish friends, and we guffaw and drink Mogan David and eat gefilte fish and make great and large fun of you. But for those of you who consider me to be an anti-Semite, are you familiar with the mad ravings of Pat Buchanan, former speechwriter and staff person for the terminally sick Dick Nixon? Huh? You familiar? A frequent contributor to MSNBC. Formerly, he worked at CNN, didn't he? Pat Buchanan, one of the darlings of this corrupt, filthy media that we have to wallow through in this country every day. Well, Pat Buchanan has something to say about Barack Obama and his pastor. And I'm going to share that with you when we come back, whether you like it or not. Well, of course, you have ultimate control over this program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Blood and toil and sweat and tears, remember. The nightmare lasted 6 long years, remember. The world drowned in a bloody tide of war and death and genocide. 57 million died, remember. It's happening again, it's happening again. Can't you see it's happening again?
I regret I had to tell you right in war. I never wanted to be a war president.
Yeah, some people are born great, George. Some people have greatness thrust upon them, right? You miserable bastard. Oh, my God. Back to another miserable bastard, Patrick Buchanan, who truly, I don't see how my good friend Rachel Maddow can sit anywhere near Buchanan. I don't know how she had my deepest respect to her that she can do that. If I were in the same room with him, I would either want, you know, the fight or flight mechanism would kick in and amp up to the point where I'd have to do something, probably run. But he is truly a loathsome person, Buchanan. And what makes him incredibly loathsome is the fact that he's also very charming. He really is. He can be so charming. And when he talks about certain things, you can sit there because he's a speechwriter. He's a wordsmith. He's like William Sapphire. He's a genius when it comes to sentence structure and language and how to say things that eat a hole in your brain 2 hours later after he's left the building. In his blog today, yesterday, he wrote, when the assassination of John F. Kennedy horrified a nation, black Muslim minister Malcolm X declared it payback for America's violence in the world, a case of, quote, chickens coming home to roost, end quote. Okay, so far, Pat, you're absolutely right. It was chickens coming home to roost. What Pat leaves out, of course, is not that Kennedy himself was so involved, although we'll never know, but the U.S. government for 30 years, 40 years prior to Kennedy, and you can go back beyond that, was involved in all sorts of corruption. You know, right before Kennedy was assassinated, we had Diem assassinated in South Vietnam. Chickens come home to roost. Absolute. And I didn't know it was Malcolm X. I thought, honest to God, I thought it was H. Rapp Brown. But before I finish this, somebody will do a Wikipedia and come up with an answer and send it to me. Anyway, Buchanan goes on, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright surely had Malcolm's words in mind when the Sunday after the 9/11 massacre of 3,000 Americans, he declared this, too, was a case of America's chickens coming home to roost. Yeah, Pat, that's pretty much true. Whether a neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic, sick bastard like you cares to admit it or not, yeah. He then quotes the Reverend Wright, who said, quote, "We bombed Hiroshima, we bombed Nagasaki, we nuked far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon, and we never batted an eye. We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back to our own front yards. America's chickens are coming home to roost," end quote. And then Buchanan says, "So Wright told his congregation on September 16, 2001. Okay, and your point, Pat, is any of it not true? Oh, I see. It's an old rhetorical device transferred to paper, and that is to make statements that everybody is that are essentially, basically, and categorically true, but are so painful in seeing them on paper that we tend to forget that the words relate to us, and we focus our shame on the person who said the words. It's an old trick, Pat. Jesus Christ, anybody who's ever studied, rhetoric? Knows how that works. Excuse me, I had to cough. Buchanan goes on, in a sermon delivered at the Howard University Chapel, January 15, 2006, Wright, quote, "blamed America for starting the AIDS virus, for training professional killers, for importing drugs and creating a racist society that would never elect a black candidate president," end quote. That's what Wright told the students at Howard University. Okay. As far as starting the AIDS virus, we really don't know about that yet, do we, Pat? As far as the other charges, training professional killers, yeah. As far as importing drugs, yeah. As far as creating a racist society, yeah. That would never elect a black candidate president, so far, Pat. Wright went on to say racism is how this country was founded and how this country is still run. Yeah, okay. And then Wright said, "No black man will ever be considered for president, and no black woman can ever be considered for anything outside what she can give with her body." Well, Pat, I mean, if you look at 350 years of history, that's a fairly rational statement. Although it appears like most statements based in historical reality, they tend to change a little bit. Right, Pat? Reverend Wright went on to say, according to Pat Buchanan, "America is still the number one killer in the world. We are deeply..." Yeah, that's true. "We are deeply involved in the importing of drugs." Yeah. "The exporting of guns." Correct. "And the training of professional killers." Absolutely. "We bombed Cambodia, Iraq, and Nicaragua, killing women and children while trying to get public opinion turned against Castro and Gaddafi." Yes. Okay. "We put Nelson Mandela in prison." Well, we supported that. "And supported apartheid the whole 27 years he was there." Correct. "We believe in white supremacy and black inferiority and believe it more than we believe in God." Yes, that's true. So far, Pat, everything the man has said is right. How many of these filthy Christian fundamentalist preachers use the Bible to uphold and approve to their mouth-breathing sucker fools in the pews that slavery is what God wants? It says so in the Bible. It says it in the Bible, Pat! And then he says, he quotes Reverend Wright as saying, "We started the AIDS virus. We are only able to maintain our level of living by making sure that third world people live in grinding poverty." Yeah, on the first part. I'll come to that in a second. On the second part, yeah. And then Pat, that's the end of the quotes. Then Pat says, "This virulent strain of anti-Americanism and Afro-racism." Woo! Do you like that? Son of a bitch! I've never seen that one before, Pat. Afro-racism. A new term! Stand up, everybody, and salute it. Afro-racism. He goes on, and then he says, further in his little column today, it is easy now to understand why Michelle Obama, before Barack began to win, had never once been proud of her country. Who could be proud of the America that lives in the malignant imagination of Reverend Wright? Malignant imagination, Pat? Why, you slimy old rat bastard, you? What are you talking about? What malignant imagination? Again, Pat, rather than just quote the preacher, point out where he's wrong. Can't do that, can you? And the whole point of your column is, as I said, the rhetorical device that you're using, not to seek the truth, but to accomplish what you're setting out to do, and that is to utterly and absolutely inflame, to set the heads on fire of the people at Newsmax, the dumb bastards who read this and go, yeah, goddamn right, that's why I'll never vote for a, well, you know. Buchanan goes on to say Barack has now moved to separate himself from Wright's rants and removed him from the campaign roster, and he will likely be forced with anguish to turn his back on, repudiate, and reject his beloved friend and teacher. Pat, you dirty son of a bitch, you. I swear to God, you know, your use of language is just so filthy. But then, so are you. He goes on, but it's too late for that, for Wright has, for millions of Americans, filled in the blanks about Barack. Wright tells us the kind of company Barack keeps, the kind of men he holds close, the kind of attitudes and beliefs he finds acceptable, if not congenial. Huh? You like this? Doesn't this way outrank the mad, phlegm-flicking ravings on some of these right-wing hate sites, using the N-word, using the most vile kind of slave master language you could possibly imagine? Isn't this better? Isn't Pat Buchanan so slick, so clean, so greased? Doesn't he slide right between your frontal lobes like he was never there? Huh? Doesn't he? Zew. And then he says, truly, the Democratic Party is now headed for a train wreck. Though Barack seems likely to win more pledged delegates than Hillary, the superdelegates will have to decide whether they want to offer America a nominee whose pastor and mentor embodies the anti-white racism and anti-Americanism that has ever brought the patriotic blood of middle America to a boil. Oh, Jesus, God! And then he says, Wright is not the sort of fellow you want to bring with you into deer hunter country. Deer hunter? The movie? The movie about the Russian population in around Pittsburgh who went to fight in Vietnam? What the hell are you talking about, you sick son of a bitch? What are you talking? Now, as far as AIDS being introduced into the black community? Last night on MSNBC, Tucker Carlson kept ridiculing Jeremiah Wright for saying that AIDS was introduced in the black community by the government. And according to what I have here, he repeated at least three times, laughing that little snarky laugh of his. Apparently, Tucker Carlson finds it outrageous that anyone would believe that our government would do anything so outrageous. Well, Tucker needs a history lesson, and I'll share it with you when we come back. Oh, I hate these pigs. I hate them. Have I mentioned that yet tonight? How much I hate these people that are trying to destroy my country. Oh, my God, I'd like to set them all adrift.
Out from your TV set. You will obey me while I lead you in the garbage that I feed you. Until the day that we don't need you, don't go for help. No one will heed you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold, and you will do as you are told until the rights to you are sold.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. So, Pat Buchanan, focusing in on what the Reverend Wright said, none of which Pat can refute. He uses Reverend Wright's words and lets them stand because they are words that white people can't handle. They're words that Americans can't handle for the most part. You know, you bring up Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the first thing out of most people's mouths is, well, you know, a million Americans' lives would have been lost if we had invaded Japan. They buy into the revisionist history, the lies and distortions that were told to justify unleashing hell on Earth. Blah, blah, blah. But Buchanan is so just inherently evil. He's another one who will slit the throat. He will get with Hagee and slit the throats of every Jew on earth given a chance. Buchanan refuses to go to a Catholic church that doesn't still do the whole shtick in Latin. He's one of these medieval Catholics, you know, burn them all at the stake. But anyway, his comments about his smarmy comments about the Reverend Wright suggesting that AIDS was introduced into the black community by the U.S. government back during the Nixon years. Who knows? Who knows if that is true? Honest to God, who knows? But we do know about this, don't we? Which might explain, Pat, why the idea of the U.S. government using its wiles to murder black folk might have a ring of truth to it. It was called the Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment. Pat, did you ever hear of it? For 40 years, between 32 and 1972, the U.S. Public Health Service conducted an experiment on 400 black men in the late stages of syphilis. Do you know about this, Pat? That's a disease that people can get from unprotected sexual intercourse, Pat. These men, for the most part, were illiterate sharecroppers from one of the poorest counties in Alabama. They were never told what disease they were suffering from or its seriousness. The U.S. government said that they were being treated for bad blood. Y'all have bad blood. Come here, boy. You know, we did some testing on you. You got bad blood. Now here, take these two pills. Well, what are these, Massa? They will cure you. They're really sugar pills, see? Come here, boy. 400 black men were informed they were being treated for bad blood, and their doctors had no intention of curing them of syphilis at all. The government said, oh, no, this is perfect, man. Look at this. The data for this experiment was to be collected from autopsies of the men. Autopsies, Pat, that means, you know, after they die. And they were thus deliberately left to degenerate under the ravages of third-stage syphilis, which can include, Pat, tumors, heart disease, paralysis, blindness, insanity, and ultimately, the great release, Pat, death! Ah, do you not know about the Tuskegee experiment, Pat? One of the doctors involved explained, quote, as I see it, we have no further interest in these patients until they die, end quote. Now, by the end of the experiment, 28 of the men had died directly of syphilis, 100 were dead of related complications, 40 of their wives had been affected, 19 of their children had been born with congenital syphilis. How had these men been induced to endure a fatal disease in the name of science? Huh?
Oh, come here, boy. We need you for your government. Now, let me explain to you something here. You have bad blood.
Bad blood. So in 1990, Pat, a survey found that 10% of African Americans believed that the U.S. government created AIDS as a plot to exterminate blacks, and another 20% could not rule out the possibility that this might be true. Turn the figures around, Pat, and 90% of African Americans did not believe the U.S. government created AIDS. And 80% were willing to totally rule out the possibility that that might be true. But you see, Pat, as preposterous and paranoid as all this might sound at one time, the Tuskegee experiment must have seemed equally weird and paranoid and preposterous. And,
oh, no, that's not going to happen. Not to our Negroes here in Alabama. We're not going to let that happen to our Negroes. We love our Negroes. Why would we do something like that? No, we don't operate that way here in South Alabama. We just don't do that. You know, white folks up north, the Yankees, believe they're called, are saying this about us. And we don't do that. We love our Negroes here in Alabama. Always have, always will. You understand?
Who could imagine that the U.S. government, all the way up to the Surgeon General of the United States, deliberately allowed a group of citizens to die from a terrible disease for the sake of this filthy experiment, without their consent, without their knowledge, without their understanding. Huh? But Pat, you racist, anti-Semite, anti-immigrant son of a bitch, you, Pat, it happened. It really did happen. Huh? So in light of this shameful episode, out of how many, Pat? Oh, if you could just be a Negro for a week, Pat. Even today. Excuse me, but Pat, if you could have been encased in African consciousness, I'm sorry, African-American consciousness about 60 years ago, around the time when the Reverend Wright was being told what he could and couldn't do. Well, Pat, maybe your attitude would be a little bit different. You think, boy? Huh? Is it any surprise, Pat, that African-Americans have a, let's call it, widespread mistrust of the government and white society in general? Why, Pat, is that a surprise to you? Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. All right. You still listening? That was a rough first hour, wasn't it? Huh? For the people who use the Malloy program in the podcast as an exercise audio, well, tomorrow we'll take the pounds off, put the muscle on, if you just listen that first hour. You all know who Barbara Ehrenreich is, I'm sure. She has something at Huffington Post that the Hillary supporters are going to hate. Just going to hate it. This is something I've talked about in this program a couple of times over the past 5 years. And as Ehrenreich points out, there's a reason why Hillary Clinton has remained relatively silent during all this nonsense over the remarks by Obama's former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. And the reason for that, Ehrenreich says, is when it comes to unsavory religious affiliations, Hillary Clinton is a lot more vulnerable than Obama. Do you know what she's referring to there? How many of you know about this? In the September 2007 issue of Mother Jones, two writers, Catherine Joyce and Jeff Charlotte, in that issue, and I remember reading this and feeling my, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck kind of stand on end. The writers reported that, quote, through all of her years in Washington, Hillary Clinton has been an active participant in conservative Bible study and prayer circles that are part of a secretive Capitol Hill group known as the Fellowship, also known as the Family. Now, very few people know that, but both these writers, one of these writers, Jeff Charlotte, has a book coming out in May called The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. And as Ehrenreich points out, the family's most visible activity is its blandly innocuous national prayer breakfast. How many of you see, you've heard of that, right? Can I see some hands? Thank you. It's held every February in Washington. But almost all of his real work goes on behind the scenes, knitting together international networks of right-wing leaders, most of them ostensibly Christian. Now, this is not a new network. In the 1940s, the family reached out to former and not-so-former Nazis. And its fascination with that exemplary leader, Adolf Hitler, has continued along with ties to a whole bestiary of murderous thugs. As Jeff Charlotte reported in Harper's back in 2003, during the 1960s, the family forged relationships between the U.S. government and some of the most anti-communist and dictatorial elements within Africa's post-colonial leadership. The Brazilian dictator, General Costa e Silva, with family support, was overseeing regular fellowship groups for Latin American leaders, while in Indonesia, General Suharto, whose tally of dead runs into the several hundred thousand so-called communists, one of the century's most murderous dictators, Suharto, was presiding over a group of 50 Indonesian legislators, supported by the family. During the Reagan administration, the family helped build friendships between the U.S. government and men such as Salvadoran General Carlos Casanova, convicted by a Florida jury of the torture of thousands, Honduran General Gustavo Alvarez Martinez, himself an evangelical minister who was linked to both the CIA and death squads before his own death. At the heart of the family's American branch is a collection of powerful right-wing politicals who include, or have included, Sam Brownback, Ed Meese, John Ashcroft, James Inhofe, Rick Santorum. Religious Nazis get to use the family's spacious estate on the Potomac called the Cedars, which is maintained by young men in family group homes and where meals are served by the family's young women's group. And at the family's frequent prayer gatherings, they get powerful jolts of spiritual refreshment tailored to the already powerful. Now, regarding Clinton, she fell in with the family in 1993 when she joined a Bible study group composed of wives of conservative leaders like Jack Kemp and James Baker. When she ascended to the Senate, she was promoted to what the writer Charlotte calls the family's, quote, most elite cell, end quote, the weekly Senate prayer breakfast, which included, until his downfall, Virginia's notoriously racist Governor George Allen. This has not been a casual connection for Clinton. She has written of Doug Coe, the family's publicity-averse leader, that he is, quote, a unique presence in Washington, a genuinely loving spiritual mentor and guide to anyone, regardless of party of faith, who wants to deepen his or her relationship with God, end quote. That's Hillary's writings. Furthermore, the family takes credit for some of Clinton's rightward legislative tendencies, including her support for a law guaranteeing so-called religious freedom in the workplace, such as for pharmacists who refuse to fill birth control prescriptions, and police officers who refuse to guard abortion clinics. What drew Hillary Clinton into the sinister heart of the international right? Maybe it was just a phase in her tormented search for identity. She reached out to many potential spiritual mentors during her White House days, including the New Age guru Marianne Williamson and the liberal Rabbi Michael Lerner. But it was the family association that stuck. The family avoids the word Christian, but worships Jesus, though not the Jesus who promised the earth to the meek. They believe that in mass societies it's only the elites who matter, the political leaders who can build God's dominion on earth, and insofar as the family has a consistent policy or philosophy, it's all about power, cultivating it, building it, and networking it together into ever stronger units or cells. Doug Coe, the one Hillary finds warm and fuzzy, says, quote, we work with power where we can, and we build new power where we can't. And as Barbara Ehrenreich concludes, Obama has given a beautiful speech on race and his affiliation with the Trinity Unity Church of Christ. Now it's up to Clinton to explain, or better yet, renounce, her longstanding connection with the fascist-leaning family. Oh, well, When do you think that's going to happen? Truth Seeker? I remember a couple, I guess it was a couple of years ago, before the article came out in Mother Jones, where we were talking about the article that was in Harper's about the family, about the National Prayer Breakfast. What's up with this? There's something stinking about this. I've always thought that. It's been around since before I've been around, this organization, the family. But I can remember questioning it as a result of what Jeff Charlotte had written in Harper's at the time. And, of course, that discussion went nowhere for the main reason who cared about Senator Hillary Clinton. She was senator from New York, yawn. And prior to that, when the Harper's Magazine article talked about Hillary's association with these thugs when she was first lady, again, who cared? I mean, when you were married to a demon like Bill Clinton, obviously you're going to try to find solace or comfort somewhere. You know, to get away from this adulterous son of a bitch. So, you know, it didn't seem to matter too much. But then I started doing a little independent research. Thank you, Wikipedia and Google. About the family. The secret fundamentalist organization. You know, and then I started thinking about all the people who have written to me, emailed me over the years, with all the tinfoil hat stuff about, Malloy, do you realize that the overarching conspiracy, blah, 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 and how I used to laugh at those people? I did. I used to laugh at those people and think, oh, Christ, here we go again, you know, All of a sudden, or maybe not so all of a sudden, it's not so funny anymore. So here's Barack Obama defending his friendship with a pastor who said some very emotional things, none of which were untrue, on the one hand. On the other hand, Hillary Clinton and her association with a neo-fascist religious right organization is given a complete free pass. Oy, go figure.
Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
I just wonder, because I have a lot of friends who are Hillary Clinton supporters. I really do. I'm just curious. You needn't answer this. Just tossing it out there. How do the Hillary Clinton supporters continue to support Senator Clinton with all the information that's out there, not the least of which I just shared with you, written in Huffington Post by Barbara Ehrenreich, covered by Harper's, covered by Mother Jones. These are liberal or progressive magazines, writers, who do not have an axe to grind about true liberals or progressives, but do have, like I do and possibly you, a deep and abiding contempt for people who try to present themselves as liberals or progressives and are not. Damn it, what is so hard about accepting that? Of all the women, all the and I have to tell you, I've gotten just a tidal wave of nasty emails from women listeners, some of whom have said, you know, I've listened to you, Malloy, for 10 years, no more, goodbye, I've had it with you and your sexist attitude. Because I don't support Hillary Clinton. Never have, though. Dear hearts, I never have. Ever. Because the information is out there about her attachments, about her connections, about what she's about. Christ, why is that? Why does that set off such a firestorm of anger among Hillary Clinton supporters when you have a messenger, moi, who just shares with you the truth? Never mind. Protesters all over the country today about the pigs' war anniversary that occurred today. Thousands of people carried signs in New York, chanted in the streets of Manhattan, calling for an end to the war. Or was that yesterday? Demonstrators also converged in D.C., San Francisco, Portland. Tim Robbins said at the start of the march in D.C., Americans want this war to end. When are we going to start listening to them? 2 days of war protests began yesterday in Washington. Raucous morning march along Constitution Avenue. Piece of silent street theater during the evening rush hour inside Union Station, which was a joy to behold. Rallies, blockades, demonstrations. 31 people arrested this morning in D.C., as they staged a nonviolent blockade at the national headquarters of the Internal Revenue Service. The protesters had placed yellow police tape saying, "War crime scene," across the entrance to the building. 100 others joined the demonstration carrying signs, banners, and props. New York City War Resisters League organizer Ed Hedeman said before he was arrested, quote, "Just as military recruiters supply bodies for the war, the IRS supplies the funding." Do you know about the War Resisters League? You should. It's almost 100 years old, this organization, a secular pacifist organization not related to any religious belief, headquartered in New York, affiliated with the War Resisters International, based in London. They believe that war is a crime against humanity, and they advocate Gandhian nonviolence as a method for creating a democratic society free of all the booger bears, war, racism, sexism, human exploitation, slavery, the transportation of women and children for sexual gratification, all of that. That's the War Resisters League. The demonstrations around the country were sponsored by the War Resisters League, United for Peace and Justice, National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, Movement for a Democratic Society, Ground Zero for Peace, Granny Peace Brigade, Code Pink, and the Socialist Party USA. There was coverage in newspapers in scanning through my list of must-check-out everyday newspapers. There were reports. Did you see it anyplace else? Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney personifies evil more so than anyone I think I have ever seen, including Dick Nixon. This morning, the fifth anniversary of the Iraq invasion, occupation, and mass murder, ABC Good Morning America had an interview with this monster. White House correspondent, ABC White House correspondent Martha Raddatz had a sit-down with him, and Cheney flatly told her that he doesn't care what the American public's view is regarding the war. And in his statement, which we're going to play for you when we come back after the break, you will hear Dick Cheney take down his drawers and urinate all over dead American soldiers, dead Iraqis, dead children, brutalized Marines and soldiers, brutalized civilian population. He just... Oh, God, I got to stop, or I'm probably going to get tossed off the air here. This filthy pig, stick around so you can hear what he said. You probably already know, but you've got to hear it with your own ears. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
On this endless killing spree, how many kids can you kill? Send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV.
Thank you.
It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Dick Cheney, the monster behind this inept little twit, George Bush. Dick Cheney, who, I can't think of anyone in modern times who's done more to destroy this country and to make sure that the lasting effects of his administration will be poisonous, just pure poison, than Dick Cheney. The after effects of the United States as it's perceived, as it has conducted itself, and as it's seen by the rest of the world. Nobody in modern history. Dick Nixon is a shopkeeper compared to George Bush. He's a pawnbroker. Dick Cheney. Forget George Bush. He's a little twit who likes to strut around and dress up like a real man and play soldier or leader or pilot or whatever the hell he likes to play. Oh, that's, the decider. That's what he likes to play. But Cheney is the heart of evil. He's the heart of darkness. He is what you find when you plumb those reptilian depths of the human consciousness, stuff that's still down there, that hasn't evolved out yet. This morning on ABC's Good Morning America, he had an interview with Martha Raddatz, White House correspondent for that network. And he says he doesn't care about the American public's view on the war. Raddatz said, 2/3 of Americans say it's not worth fighting. Cheney says, so? Raddatz says, so? You don't care what the American people think? Cheney, no. And then he goes on. Here it is. This is Martha Raddatz and Dick Cheney.
2/3 of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So? You don't care what the American people think?
No, I think you cannot be blown off course by the fluctuations in the public opinion polls. There has, in fact, been fundamental change and transformation and improvement for the better. That's a huge accomplishment.
There's been a fundamental change and transformation for the better. Of course he doesn't care. When Conrad wrote about the heart of darkness, and I think even my literate emailers will agree that it was an allegory, don't you think maybe the Colonel Kurtz character, at least in Apocalypse Now adaptation, would pretty much be Dick Cheney, except Dick Cheney is a cowardly, weak, sorry, miserable human being. Jack writes, I was watching some of the Winter Soldier testimony, and they interviewed a soldier whose job it was to photograph the dead Iraqi people regardless of their innocence. This soldier was clearly distraught and angered by the horrendous carnage he'd witnessed while in Iraq. And this lousy bastard Cheney says, so what? It's unbelievable. Well, Cheney's puppet, the giggling killer, went to the Pentagon today. And I looked at some of the video. I saw the officers sitting out there, very attentive as their illustrious and glorious Commander-in-Chief, the man who ordered them into two wars, ill-equipped, ill-trained, without a goal, so that these officers could see their men bloodied and butchered, and that these officers could be fully aware of the damage they're doing to the U.S. reputation, the damage they're doing that has been done to returning veterans. And there they sat, politely, respectfully, while this piece of human waste stood at the podium, this George Bush, and said the following.
On this day in 2003, the United States began Operation Iraqi Freedom. As the campaign unfolded, tens and thousands of our troops poured across the Iraqi border to liberate the Iraqi people and remove a regime that threatened free nations. 5 years into this battle, there's an understandable debate over whether the war was worth fighting, whether the fight is worth winning, and whether we can win it. The answers are clear to me. Removing Saddam Hussein from power was the right decision, and this is a fight America can and must win. Operation Iraqi Freedom was a remarkable display of military effectiveness, aided by the most effective and precise air campaign in history.
Oh, my God.
Coalition forces raced across 350 miles of enemy territory, destroying Republican Guard divisions, pushing through the Karbala Gap, capturing Saddam International Airport, and liberating Baghdad in less than 1 month. Along the way, our troops added new chapters to the story of American military heroism.
Which includes, does it, George Abu Ghraib and other instances of torture? Jessica Lynch lies, decimation of antiquities, the looting of banks and museums, the use of banned chemical weapons, including flesh-melting white phosphorus, shooting unarmed civilians execution-style, bombing a water treatment facility in Fallujah, the gang rape of Iraqi women, the execution of families, the bombing of the children's hospital, the use of depleted uranium weapons, up to 1 million civilians dead, the failure to adequately arm, train, and equip our own troops, the Walter Reed scandals, the denial of veterans' benefits and rehabilitation to our maimed troops, and it goes on and on and on, and this piece of human waste calls it all romantic and heroic.
And the speed, precision, and brilliant execution of the campaign will be studied by military historians for years to come.
Maybe not for the reasons you think. Maybe not for the reasons you think. The murderous moron at the microphone continues about the glories of his illegal war, his occupation, and the slaughter. No talk about ridding Iraq of those dangerous WMDs. Whatever happened to that? Or the terrorist Saddam was training and hiding? Gone. So, George, what is the reason we went to Iraq? Just to remove a dictator we installed in the first place when he became inconvenient? Is it worth up to 1 million dead civilians, tens of thousands of dead and maimed American troops, for what? And Saddam's been executed, oh my God, such a long time ago. Why are we still there? What's the mission now?
Battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated.
Oh, God.
But it is a fight we must win.
For Exxon.
So our troops have engaged these enemies with courage and determination. And as they battle the terrorists and extremists in Iraq, they have helped the Iraqi people reclaim their nation and helped a young democracy rise from the rubble of Saddam Hussein's tyranny.
Oh, my God.
Over the past 5 years, we've seen moments of triumph and moments of tragedy. We've watched in admiration as 12 million Iraqis defied the terrorists and went to the polls and chose their leaders in free elections.
Try not to snicker there.
We watched in horror as Al-Qaeda beheaded innocent captives and sent suicide bombers to blow up mosques and markets. These actions show the brutal nature of the enemy in Iraq.
Oh, God.
And they serve as a grim reminder. The terrorists who murder the innocent in the streets of Baghdad want to murder the innocent in the streets of America.
Oh, my God.
Defeating this enemy in Iraq will make it less likely that we'll face the enemy here at home.
Can we remind this ignorant piece of human waste one more time that there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq until his invasion? What did he say? We've helped the Iraqi people reclaim their nation and helped a young democracy rise from the rubble of Saddam Hussein's tyranny. Like what, George? A corpse? A zombie? By the way, where's Rummy these days? Hanging out in one of his seven mansions around the world? Shouldn't he be here for the fifth anniversary party? Is he still claiming he didn't sell weapons to Saddam? Hey, you guys, saving some cake, okay? No telling where that filthy pig is. And now, Mensa Man, when we come back, we'll explain why he couldn't prematurely withdraw. You'll pardon what that conjures up in your mind. From Iraq. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
10 before the hour. Just a couple more, if you can handle this. Bush discussing his wonderful five-year-long murder spree in Iraq before Pentagon workers today. Mensa Man now explains why he couldn't prematurely withdraw from Iraq. And as usual, there's unintended irony from this idiot as he explains how desperate and bloody conditions had become in Iraq before his glorious surge. Listen to this. It says, close to an admission of war crimes and hideous bloody mistakes that he's made in Iraq as he'll ever come to.
A little over a year ago, the fight in Iraq was faltering as pressures built here in Washington for withdrawal before the job was done. My administration understood that America could not retreat in the face of terror. And we knew that if we did not act, the violence that had been consuming Iraq would worsen and spread and could eventually reach genocidal levels. Baghdad could have disintegrated into a contagion of killing, and Iraq could have descended into full-blown sectarian warfare. So we reviewed the strategy and changed course in Iraq. Sent reinforcements into the country in a dramatic policy shift that is now known as the surge.
Oh, Jesus.
General David Petraeus took command with a new mission. Work with the Iraqi forces to protect the Iraqi people, pressure the enemy in its strongholds, and deny the terrorist sanctuary anywhere in the country.
Iraq could have descended into full-blown sectarian warfare. Violence that had been consuming Iraq would worsen and spread and reach genocidal levels. So you admit, you freak, that this is what you brought to Iraq for over 4 years? This level of massacre and chaos? Now tell me again how the Iraqis benefited from your liberation? It's astonishing. So the surge had to be put into effect to deny the terrorist sanctuary anywhere in the country. Terrorists again, who were not in Iraq before Bush drew them in like flies around a dung heap. We are spending the lives of countless thousands of people. Countless thousands wounded. hundreds of billions of dollars to fight an enemy Bush created entirely on his own. And those soldiers sit there and listen to this dribble. Last one, I think. No, what do we got here? Two more? All right, this one. Listen, Bush tells the war critics to shut up already, because after 5 years and hundreds of thousands of deaths and $1.5 trillion of taxpayer dollars, his plan is working. And listen to the fear-mongering that he puts in here. If we don't stay in Iraq and keep killing and dying, then we'll suffer another 9/11. And Al-Qaeda will hit us with nukes? Terror. 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 Everywhere.
Successes we're seeing in Iraq are undeniable, yet some in Washington still call for retreat. War critics can no longer credibly argue that we're losing in Iraq. So they now argue the war costs too much. In recent months, we've heard exaggerated amounts of the costs of this war.
Oh, yeah.
No one would argue that this war has not come at a high cost in lives and treasure.
But
those costs are necessary when we consider the cost of a strategic victory for our enemies in Iraq. If we were to allow our enemies to prevail in Iraq, the violence that is now declining would accelerate, and Iraq would descend into chaos. And embolden Al-Qaeda, with access to Iraq's oil resources, could pursue its ambitions to acquire weapons of mass destruction to attack America and other free nations.
This man is insane. Do you hear
it? Iran would be emboldened as well.
He's crazy. He's crazy.
With a renewed determination to develop nuclear weapons and impose his brand of hegemony across the Middle East.
He's insane.
Our enemies would see in America an American failure in Iraq as evidence of weakness.
Oh, my God.
To allow this to happen would be to ignore the lessons of September the 11th and make it more likely that America would suffer another attack like the one we experienced that day. A day in which 19 armed men with box cutters killed nearly 3,000 people in our soil.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, this man is absolutely insane. Do we have time for the last one? We don't? Okay. We'll do it when we come back. This is the Armageddonist standing there in front of the military branch of the U.S. government. This is the guy who's trying to hasten the arrival of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, with as much bloodshed as he can possibly loosen in the Middle East.
I just find it hard to believe that he can stand there with a straight smirk on his face and still mention 9/11 and Iraq and Iran in the same sentence.
Because he's insane. And he assumes, like most crazy people do, that he's not. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. About 6:30 past the hour. Coming up in right at the bottom of the hour, we are going to play for you, if you've not heard it before, the sound from Shock and Awe when Bush launched his murderous attack against a population unable to defend itself. And also, by the way, as Robert writes in, Mike, on this fifth anniversary, it should be said that Bush was 100% determined to go to war, and all these lives would have been saved if Bush had simply kept his word and allowed Saddam Hussein to safely fly to a third world country and allow an unrelated leader in Iraq to take over. Saddam secretly accepted, in the weeks before the war, the offer from Bush, but Bush lied and never intended to permit that. Then Bush violated his own deadline and began bombing Iraq the day before his own deadline to Hussein expired, which was reported on CNN at the time but almost never mentioned since. How can any objective person not admit Bush is a war criminal when you think of these facts? The war absolutely would not have happened if Bush had not violated his own pledge to allow Hussein to go into exile. Yeah, see, thanks for sending it in, Robert. That's the problem with us in this country and how we are brainwashed on a daily basis by television. Don't forget, the primary function of television, the only function of television, is to make you forget. And Bush is a classic example of that when he comes up with these non sequiturs or totally unrelated to anything comments about, well, history's, you know, that's not where, yeah, you know, all that garbage, right? All right, here he is, last one. Because Raisin Brain had to jet off to the big fifth anniversary party someplace and cut the cake that he had special ordered for the 4,000 plus troops he's responsible for having killed. Oh, and of course, sending more troops to kill and die for his personal ambitions. This is, you know, Bush is going to, he's going to go down in history, assuming that there are historians left who will really write about this period in our bloody history. They'll probably be written off, though, like the Reverend Wright was, as some kind of a freak, right? Here's George W. Bush.
Our troops on the front lines understand what is at stake. They know that the mission in Iraq has been difficult and has been trying for our nation, because they're the ones who've carried out most of the burdens. They're all volunteers who have stepped forward to defend America in a time of danger. Some of them have gone out of their way to return to the fight.
Oh, yeah.
More than 4,400 men and women have given their lives in the war on terror. We'll pray for their families.
Oh, thanks.
We'll always honor their memory.
Oh, good.
The best way we can honor them is by making sure that their sacrifice was not in vain.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
5 years ago tonight, I promised the American people that in this struggle ahead, we will accept no outcome but victory. Today, standing before men and women who have helped liberate a nation, I reaffirm the commitment. The battle in Iraq is noble.
And romantic.
It is necessary, and it is just. And with your courage, the battle in Iraq will end in victory.
And what is the victory again, George? What is it? Define the weapons of mass destruction. Can you define it? To overthrow Saddam Hussein. Uh-huh. To end the Hussein regime. To secure the oil fields. What is it, George? What is the mission? Huh? How much more blood do you have to loose in that sad country before you're satiated? How much more, you goddamn vampire? How much more? You hope insane McCain will keep the river of blood flowing for another 100 years? You and that cyborg pig that runs you, don't you, George? This is sick. I swear to God, this is some of the sickest stuff. We have a man who is clinically mad standing in front of the Pentagon officer corps, whatever the hell they're called, giving this kind of a gibberish, madman, insane speech. Even Hitler had it down better than this freak. I'm talking, don't send me the emails, oh, for Christ's sake. I'm talking about Hitler's determination to murder people. So there he stands. And the media reporting it tonight and today. Here's our great leader. Look at this. Oh, my God. Let's do some phone calls here before you all say to hell with this and go home. Starting with Dave in Rock Springs, Wyoming, listening on the Internet. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yeah, welcome. You were mentioning about that girl that got raped. I'd just like to ask you, what is a terrorist? Now, you have a daughter, right?
Yes, I do.
If a group
I have three daughters.
If a group of people came into your house, held you at gunpoint, then gang-raped your daughter, what would you consider them?
A dead?
Yeah, you would consider them terrorists, right?
For a moment, until I killed them all.
Well, they eventually killed the family as well, so I guess that point is moot. But
no, I understand your point.
You know, I mean, so what do you think the Iraqis are considering Americans? They can't differentiate between you or the guys wearing the uniforms, or the psychotic bastards that somehow got into the uniforms. You know, I mean, what kind of enemies are being bred against the United States right now?
Millions who are going to be, you know, this is not like when the communists hated us. These are religious people who clearly see that what we are doing has its basis in Christian hatred of Islam. That's why, you know, we're all friends with the commies now. Look at us. The Muslims will remember this for 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years, if there's that much time left for anybody to remember anything. This is not something that's going to go down as, oh, damn, well, it was war and it was rough, but we're all friends now. Let's open up a Starbucks in downtown Baghdad. That's not what this is. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, Martin Luther King said it back in 68. Reverend Wright has said it. Malcolm X said it. I've said it. Lots of white people, lots of black people have said it. The historical record proves it. Smedley Butler, a white man, a general, United States Marine Corps, two times Congressional Medal of Honor winner, said it. This country is the leading exporter of terror on earth and has been for over 100 years now. But we can't. You see, we can't accept that. We can't get that in our minds. We can't say, OK, then let's stop. We can't do that.
You see, I've got a way out because, you know, we all know that the president is a good Christian, right? And there's a little Christian thing called humility. And maybe he needs to go hat in hand to the UN and ask them to bail his ass out. And say the United States will pay whatever they ask, but help us get out of this mess. Because you know what? There's no other way out.
Yeah.
You're going to have to ask for outside help, and he doesn't have the guts to do it. Or the humility.
Or the sanity. He's an insane man, Dave. He just is absolutely insane. Dave, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, man. Stay in touch. We don't get that many calls from Wyoming. Thanks, Dave. Peter is calling from Phoenix. Put Peter on hold real quick. Thank you. Susan is calling from Oakland Park, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Before I get to what I called about, does that last conversation make Bush the leading importer of death and destruction?
Yeah, I would think
on the
so.
U.S.?
Well, maybe not the leading importer, but he's certainly in the top 10. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And didn't he tell Tim Russert a few years ago about the war on terror that I don't think you can win it?
He did?
Okay. But what I really called about was...
Hold on a second. Let me put you on hold, Susan, while we do this break, and then we'll come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Was the question unasked? Won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old.
With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old.
Fully understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily. That's exactly what the United States military says. That you can't win this military.
But you sick bastard, you just said... Oh, never mind. And some people still wonder why I call this guy absolutely, totally crazy. Back to Susan, who called in from Oakland Park, Florida. Where were we?
On a new topic.
Okay, go ahead.
When you spoke at the end of the first hour about the Tuskegee, or as one legislator put it, Tuskegee. Syphilis experiments.
Right.
You reminded me that only 4, 5, 6 years ago, Bush's FDA approved an experiment, quote unquote, proposed by Monsanto or Dow Chemical or some such, exposing poor blacks with young children to pesticides.
Yeah, that's
the acceptable blood levels in children.
Yeah, that's going on. It's going on now. It's going on in Duval County, which is Jacksonville, Florida. It just gets no more publicity. And the companies that are providing the insecticides to these families, and after the experiment is over, is going to give them CD players and DVDs.
Right. I remember a flat screen TV being a lure.
Yeah, little shiny toys.
Yeah, so you don't have to go back.
Yeah, well,
60, 70 years to show
that's true.
That the same thing is going on now, and that Reverend Wright, I mean, aside from the AIDS, the mention of AIDS being introduced in this country by white people, there wasn't one single thing he said that can't be proven to be true.
That's true.
And can't be shown to be true.
Oh, God.
I'm looking for a temperate climate like Florida's in some other country that will accept refugees and political asylum seekers.
Argentina.
I don't know. I think it's got its problems too. But
my understanding is that I just read something yesterday or Sunday in the New York Times that Buenos Aires is becoming just this huge magnet for writers and artists and filmmakers and poets and free spirits and people who have had enough. Their economy may still be struggling after what we put them through back in the 80s, but Argentina looks like a good possibility.
I'll check it out.
All right. Send me a postcard.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate it. Peter is calling from Phoenix, listening on Sirius. Hey, Peter.
Hello. Yeah,
hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
All right. Yeah, as I told your screener, I really don't want Obama to become president. And the reason why is because if he were president, he would, you know, preside over this mess. And there's really no way out of this financial mess, let alone the war. And, because, see, the financial part of it, I see a lot of parallels to the Depression of 29. Now, for one thing, being a truck driver, I'm starting to see a glut in stock. You know, there's a lot of overstock going on out there. And now we have the disappearance of the power of the American consumer, which is basically going to lead to a depression, not a recession.
You may be right. You may be absolutely right.
Yeah. And see, for Obama to have to preside over something like that, the first thing they're going to say is, see, you let the end guy, you know.
Yeah, I came up with that idea, too, several weeks ago. You know, my attitude was let McCain or whoever the Republican was going to be, let him have it. This is before McCain won everything. Let him have the presidency, but make sure that we have a veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate. That way, whatever legislation Democrats want passed would be passed. and whatever veto McCain handed out would be overridden. So you and I are on the same page, pal. Absolutely. The only caveat I would put would be make sure that we have a veto-proof majority of Democrats. Not that all the Democrats are worth the powder to blow them to hell, but at least it's a start. And then we pick off, electorally speaking, to the NSA spooks who listen to my program. I'm talking about picking them off in elections. The blue dog Democrats, the right wing Democrats, conservative Democrats, and get rid of them. So I agree with you, man. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. So let's hope and pray that it happens. And by the way, I listen to Randy Rhodes, and that's how I heard of you.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she was talking about what happened, you know, at your last...
When I worked for Air America and the rat bastards fired me. Yeah, well.
Yeah, and I
stuff really happens.
I was wondering. I mean, you know, it looks like it's that same creep, that same, what you call a creep, what do you call it, conservative creep, that's going into Air America. I mean, it's kind of saddening if that's what's going on, where you can't, you know, be a true liberal without, you know.
Well, you know, people get fired. Peter, you've been fired. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So have I, pal. Trust me. All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take care. Take care. Everybody's been fired. All right. When we come back, fasten your seatbelts because we are going to replay the attack on Baghdad this night 5 years ago. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
25 before the hour. 5 years ago tonight, on the orders of this sick, miserable bastard in the White House and his inner circle of killers, the destruction of Baghdad was affected. This is how it sounded if you were watching as if it were a video game. CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whoever you happen to be tuned into, this is what it sounded like. Thank you. And it went on and on and on. And it's still going on. Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. Yea, seven acts are an abomination unto him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. Thanks to Dave in Pennsylvania for emailing that in. A couple of years ago on this anniversary, we played the 11-minute version of that bombing attack on a civilian population that was guilty of absolutely nothing. And the number of emails that I got that expressed real anguish made us decide that on the anniversary of each year, we would not, each year of this filthy occupation and war, we would not play the entire 11 minutes because it is excruciating. So, this is what George Bush is celebrating today. This is what the International Court at Nuremberg, Germany, after listening to testimony for almost 2 years, came back with verdicts of guilty and sentences of death by hanging against a high command that had done exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. And the Democratic Party leadership continues to insist that impeachment of this murderer is off the table. So, and as usual, you know, every year when we play this, you know, this war is older than my youngest child. This war is, the duration of this war is greater than all of our involvement in World War II. This is now, I believe, the third longest war, occupation, whatever you want to call it, that we've been involved in after the Civil War in this country and Vietnam. George W. Bush stands in front of military people today and continues to make these mad claims and rationalizations and distortions and lies. And the pigs in right-wing talk radio, all of them, continue to beat these drums and continue to insist that there are other countries that just absolutely also have to be attacked. I don't know what to say.
Soldiers' kids have got to eat, so it's the least that I can do. The least that I can do. I thrash the man who does not stand to salute our president. 'Cause in these times we must fall in line. There's no room for dissent. I support the troops, my friend, so I drive an SUV.
movie in honor of those brave young souls.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, answered your calls, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, podcast manager, our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And once again, I'm going to request that you become a Nova M founding member. You get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. You also get access to special videos and additional features, including the video from the Phoenix event of a couple of weeks ago with Scott Ritter and me. So it doesn't cost that much, $10 a month, $100 a year. It would be great to have you as a founding member of Nova M Radio. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening on KTLK. Sanchez, welcome to the program.
Senor Malloy, a very good evening to you, sir.
Thank you. Back
to But I am not going to wish you a happy anniversary. On a day like today, there's nothing happy. I don't even like using the word anniversary because it demarcates like celebration. So I'll just say a five-year demarcation of this godforsaken occupation and this illegal war, the loss of innocent lives on both sides. It's just amazing to me that, number one, these people are still controlling the board, and number two, that people are still listening to this. I mean, you've been talking all week, obviously, about the Winter Soldier meeting. How much of that, can I ask you, how much of that did you actually get to see, man?
Not as much as I would like to. I've got, though, as everyone can get, the the web address of Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org, or what's the other one? WarComesHome.org.
That's correct.
Right, where you can watch the entire thing.
Yes.
And that's one of my plans for this weekend.
Well, actually, it's a little busy right now because I tried to log on. I was trying to get some information here, but it is busy, so try again a little bit later on, but do try. And it does take a little while for the video to load up, but I actually got to see about 75% of it, man, either live or it was carried on Pacifica Radio. So I was either listening to it, and I was also listening to it on my way to the Hollywood protest march that we had here over the weekend. I didn't get to stay for too much of it. I only saw Mike Farrell and Cynthia McKinney, and I had to come straight back. But, you know, on a weekend like this and on an anniversary like this, I thought it was more important to listen to the soldiers' stories, which I saw. And I was appalled. Number one, you know, it's more effective to watch it in video form than it is to hear it on radio.
Yeah,
because
it
you
is.
Can see their faces.
That's
you
right.
You can see the torment and the torture and the angst through their eyes. It's somewhat chilling in the way that they're matter-of-factly relaying all the stories. And it's horrific. They're telling stories of, like, disregard for Iraqi citizens and how they treated dead Iraqi bodies lying on the side of the road, and you know, one soldier who was a photographer was being asked to take photographs. Soldiers would stop on the side of the road and take photographs of, as they called it, their trophies. And the one soldier related, "Well, I'm not going to participate. This isn't my body," sort of a thing. You know, I mean, I saw other stories. I mean, it's horrific. It is absolutely horrific. But it should be the responsibility before anybody votes, before anybody turns on the electronic vampire, to watch this footage. I was trying to go back to my emails right now because a Nova M chat member, Hemesia, sent me a video, and it had a song, but the footage that was along with the song, I can't remember the name of the song, but it showed the maimed Iraqi children, all these poor children that have freshly injured or without their arms or legs or whatever.
See, it's horrifying. I can't, you know, I decided 3 or 4 years ago, as cold as it sounds, I can't look at any more butchered children, corpses. I can't.
It should be requirement for every child. It should be required before anybody turns on their computer, goes to play TV, games, or whatever. They should watch this so it sinks in, because at this point the sheeple are so detuned. It was on the network news tonight. It was like between the networks. It was about either a 5-minute or 10-minute segment, depending on what network were watching.
Right.
One thing, I'm sorry to jump real quick, but I did want to wish one of the soldiers, the very last soldier that testified on Sunday, his name is Ron Cantu. Ron, I don't know if you remember me relaying to you. Remember when I told
yes.
you about SoldierVoices.net?
Yes.
He's the IVAW member that founded SoldierVoices.net, and he had his birthday on Sunday. They made him stay over, and he didn't have any prepared stories or whatever, so he told the story of how he was on Democracy Now! In the background behind it. But anyway, the most touching thing that he said was, I wanted to come here and I wanted to speak on my 30th birthday so that other soldiers could reach their 30th birthday. So his birthday was on Sunday, and I wanted to wish him a belated happy birthday. So I did want to make sure I said that.
Well, that's very kind, Sanchez.
So at any rate, we've gone 5 years, and as you were talking to, I think his name was Tim from Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
Mike, we have a brick wall. Our economy is sinking. The dollar value is dropping against the yen, against the euro. We have a brick wall, and it's coming fast. And I don't know how many people are going to be able to step out of the way and how many are going to be able to are going to slam right into that wall. But if that's what it's going to take to kick the sheeple's asses into gear, I'm sorry to be so crude, but I mean, if that's what it's going to take, it's going to be sad. It's going to be sad. It's like 1929 all over again, as Tim was saying, and
well,
I agree with that.
You know, the problem, I hear you loud and clear, the problem with that, Sanchez, is it reminds me of the time I went to a slaughterhouse down in Moultrie, Georgia, the butchered cattle, and it occurred to me, butchered hogs, it occurred to me as those hogs walked up the ramp, not one of them really understood what was about to happen. And when it did happen, of course, it was impossible for the hogs to make the connection. And I just wonder, as we careen towards that wall you're talking about, if the American people are any different from those hogs that were being led to slaughter. Thanks, Sanchez. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.